Hey, good evening, everybody. So how's your day been? My name is Mike Malloy. Welcome to tonight's program. If you're a regular listener to this program, one of the more gleeful things about me and my program to the right-wing knuckle-draggers is the fact that over the past 23 or 24 years, I have been relieved of my broadcast duties several times. And usually, no matter what the stated reason was, it was usually because my political point of view is just getting way too far left for corporate America. That even applied to a certain degree to Air America when I went to work for the network that was supposed to be the be-all, end-all for liberal talk programming, and hence was replaced by something called the Satellite Sisters. Every time I get fired, of course, I get a mountain of email from the booger eaters, the right-wingers, who love to hear all the dissenting voices disappear. So that the only voice they hear in their head, well, two voices, the voice of God, their psychopathic, murderous God, and the voice of whatever right-wing troll has their attention in any given moment. If it's in the morning, it's Beck. If it's in the afternoon, it's Limbaugh. If it's in the evening, it's Hannity. So, I've been through this a number of times. And I decided to take the path of not very much pay, but complete and total independence. The only problem I have now is a lot of our affiliates do not like the language that I use, the cuss words, and I don't blame them for that. But the stations that matter to me have stuck with me. So, having said all that, the news today that Keith Olbermann was essentially fired. Now, whether he comes back or not is, who knows? I'm sure that's between MSNBC and Keith Olbermann. To be suspended from your job with indefinitely without pay, what does that sound like to you? I mean, isn't that the same as being fired? Indefinite suspension without pay. There are a number of ways to look at it. I choose to take the paranoid way. That's how it'll be labeled. Comcast, which is a heavy-duty right-wing organization headed by right-wingers, chock-a-block with right-wingers, big cable cable providers, they are about to, with congressional approval, with congressional approval, well, maybe not last week, but damn sure this week, right? Okay. With congressional approval, Comcast is going to own 51% of NBC. The other 49% will be owned, I guess, for the foreseeable future by General Electric. Comcast does not like Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow or any of the so-called liberals. O'Donnell, what's the new guy's name? Oh, Jesus, I'm drawing a blank. The one that usually comes on right after Rachel. Lawrence O'Donnell, right. The last word, is that what it is? These three, O'Donnell, Rachel, and Olbermann, are a real thorn in the side of right-wingers in this country, especially people who own Comcast. So I will, until I hear otherwise, I'll take the position that what was done to Olbermann today was simply a matter of clearing the decks to, I don't know what Rachel is thinking. I just watched the opening to her program. She tried to treat the subject with as much levity as possible. I think the world of Rachel. I know her. I don't know Olbermann. I hope she survives. I really do. I hope Lawrence O'Donnell survives. I really do. But with Congress turning over to the Republicans, Comcast is very much aware that the incoming Republican House telecom chairman, who really doesn't like progressive newscasters and commentators, will back their play. I got an email here from M. As part of the acquisition process, they look at all contracts and consider renegotiating the most costly contracts they find in the NBC portfolio. They think Oberman is being paid too much and want to force him to renegotiate his contract. Suspended indefinitely without pay forces him to renegotiate. It's a way of firing him without quite firing him. However, indefinitely, that word pretty much means that Oberman can't come back to MSNBC. He has cause to sue, but if he does, he never works in broadcasting again. It's a setup, and the person who sent this to me said, if I were Oberman, I would sue. I know I would, because I have in my own life. Oberman has a chance to establish some important employee rights here. NBC is not only in breach of Oberman's contract, but they discriminated against Oberman, allowing other hosts to contribute to political causes, and in so doing have violated Oberman's freedom of speech as well as freedom of association, and done all this in what a lawyer would call bad faith. In other words, they invented the cause of action in order to harass an employee performing his duties in good faith. The case is not open and shut, but Oberman has a great case. It's really heartbreaking to me. I knew something was up. When was it last week when he announced that he was going to do away with, he's going to phase out worst persons in the world? One of the more effective little segments of the program that usually came on about 15 minutes before the end of his show, and a segment that no matter what was going on here in my little studio, I would make sure I wouldn't miss. Whoever writes those segments, and I'm sure Oberman probably wrote most, if not all of them, it was sheer genius, and it was great fun to watch, and he really nailed some of these rancid son of a bitches. Oberman is directly responsible for Lawrence O'Donnell having a program and for Rachel Maddow having a program. Directly responsible. Without Oberman's support, neither of these two sterling liberal commentators, Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow, I'm guessing, would be on MSNBC without the full-throated support of Keith Oberman. This, of course, puts Rachel and Lawrence in difficult positions. When I first heard this today, you know, the first shot that went through my head, so to speak, was, well, if I worked there, I would quit. I would go on indefinite leave without pay, the same as they're doing to Oberman. I realize that Rachel probably can't do that. I realize that O'Donnell probably can't do that. Or they might be sued by MSNBC for breach of their contracts. So what they have to do is take the plate of steaming dog crap that MSNBC has put in front of them and smile as they take little bites, but as they eat the entire plate. What else are they going to do? What else, indeed, unless they want to end both of their careers, which I think would be a mistake. As far as Oberman is concerned, he has been a pain in the ass of the right wing in this country ever since he's been on MSNBC. He started out as kind of a comedic look, kind of a Jon Stewart type of program, if you remember the early days. I can remember I was working for Air America at the time, or maybe it was Air America, or was it IE America? I can remember going on the air one night and saying, hey, y'all ought to check out this guy, this new guy over at MSNBC, Keith Oberman. He is really something. Well, he's been there, what, 7, 8 years? I'm getting all kinds of email from people who don't know what the hell to do, and I don't either. But I'm going to have some more on this when we come back from this break, because to me this is an incredibly negative event that occurred today, because Keith Oberman made three contributions of roughly $2,600 each to three political candidates. He is effectively fired.
Talking to yourself, don't hear a thing. passerby. I've been searching deep down in my soul. Words that I'm hearing are starting to get old. Feels like I'm
21 past the hour. At Think Progress, is it Think Progress? Yeah, Carolee writes, there's a double standard at work with regards to Oberman's suspension, not only among other personalities appearing on MSNBC as commentators, but also at the very top level of the corporate food chain. Comcast is about to own NBC after their acquisition was complete, I guess, earlier this year. Oh, that's right. It was completed. Now it has to be approved by the incoming Congress. A look at campaign finance disclosures for several organizations show that Phil Anschutz, chairman of Comcast, content partner with Comcast, donated large sums of money to one of the largest outside groups targeting Democrats in the 2010 midterm elections. The Anschutz Corporation. It's almost like Anschluss, isn't it? Doesn't it have that nice kind of Nazi ring to it? The Anschluss, the attack. Who is that on Yugoslavia? The Anschutz Corporation, wholly owned by Phil Anschutz, gave $50,000 on September 24th to the so-called First Amendment Alliance. The two candidates targeted by the First Amendment Alliance, Jack Conway and Michael Bennett. Keith Oberman gave to Jack Conway's campaign, along with Raul Grijalva and Gabriel Giffords. Those are the three that Oberman contributed to. In addition, the Anschluss family donated $170,000 to Republican candidates and committees during the 2010 election cycle, according to Open Secrets. Additionally, Comcast has contributed $125,000 to the Republican Governors Association in the 2010 cycle. There's been a lot of chatter about MSNBC policy and whether Oberman should have gotten advance approval for his donations to those three candidates. The policy that is out there to be read reads like this. MSNBC TV and NBC require permission of the president of MSNBC or of NBC News regarding, quote, anyone working for NBC News who takes part in civic or other outside activities may find that these activities jeopardize his or her standing as an impartial journalist because they may create the appearance of a conflict of interest. Oh, yeah, Oberman is an impartial journalist. Yeah, so's Rachel. Yeah, so is Lawrence O'Donnell. Anyway, going on with the statement, such activities may include participation in or contributions to political campaigns or groups that espouse controversial positions. You should report any such potential conflicts in advance to and obtain prior approval of the president of NBC News or his designee. Now, that language clearly says should get prior approval. You should. You should report any such potential conflict. You should, not must. Further, anyone who thinks Oberman is an impartial journalist should have their head examined. He's not, never has been, never will be. And he's not presented as one. But this question is left hanging. How is it that the parent corporation of NBC and chairman of that corporation, two of those people, Pat Buchanan and Joe Scarborough, are accorded First Amendment rights, or I would say it's not rights of freedom of speech, but freedom of association. Pat Buchanan and Joe Scarborough have those rights to political speech, and Keith Oberman doesn't. Now, I mentioned this the other night from the New York Times. The News Corporation, that's Murdoch, this goddamn fascist Murdoch. News Corporation is one of the biggest suppliers of content to Comcast, with contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So, how much pressure do you think Fox has to put on Comcast, even if Comcast were not inclined to get rid of people like Oberman? How much pressure? would Fox have to put on Comcast? Now, I know a lot of people say, well, Mike, that's ridiculous because Fox needs all those outlets. Let me tell you something, Sparky. If Murdoch wanted to, he could set up his own content provider for, or his own distributor for any kind of cable or satellite system on Earth. In fact, he already does that. So anyone who says Murdoch doesn't need Comcast or Comcast doesn't need Murdoch is a fool. How much pressure does it take from Fox, one of the biggest suppliers, hundreds of millions of dollars to Comcast, to apply pressure to Comcast and say, get rid of this guy? Now, there's a petition online that you can sign that goes to NBC. I've already signed it, telling MSNBC and NBC, if they want to keep their viewers, they have to put Keith Olbermann back on the air now. Again, having been through this myself, I can tell you, when I got fired by Air America, I think the petition is still out there. About 27,000 people who signed the petition. And you know what effect it had? About the same as a fart in a hurricane. But I went ahead and signed the petition anyway. Maybe you'll want to also.
Primal Scream, you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour, the Associated Press is reporting that Democratic incumbent Gabrielle Giffords has won the race for Congress in Arizona's 8th. Currently, Giffords leads Republican challenger Jesse Kelly by almost 4,000 votes. Kelly is a Tea Partier, Tea Bagger, who ran an aggressive campaign. Giffords, who won, called his ideas dangerous to the state and its economy. The Tea Bagger, Kelly, called for deep cuts to the federal government, including eliminating the Education Department. That's one of the people that Olbermann donated the maximum he could, $2,600. So Olbermann has two for two, I think. I don't know about the third one. Go to Bold Progressives, plural, boldprogressives.org. Boldprogressives.org. That's where you can sign the petition. They already have over 100,000 signatures. Please, for God's sake, just do this. You know, even you right-wing pissants who like to go to these petition signed sites and put in your smarmy comments, it doesn't make any difference. Just going there will indicate that you're supporting Olbermann. So as many as you right-wingers who possibly can, get your ass over there and make some kind of a snotty remark. And that'll be further proof of Olbermann's importance. For normal people, just sign the petition like I did. Boldprogressives, plural, .org. Senator Bernie Sanders, Vermont, is demanding Olbermann's immediate reinstatement, which I certainly support. But Ernie, here's what he said. Quote, it is outrageous that General Electric, MSNBC, would suspend Keith Olbermann for exercising his constitutional rights to contribute to a candidate of his choice. This is a real threat to political discourse in America and will have a chilling impact on every commentator for MSNBC. We live in a time when 90% of talk radio is dominated by right-wing extremists, when the Republican Party has its own cable network, Fox, and when progressive voices are few and far between. At a time when the ownership of Fox News contributed millions of dollars to the Republican Party, when a number of Fox commentators are using the network as a launching pad for their presidential campaigns and are raising money right on the air, it is absolutely unacceptable that MSNBC suspended one of its most popular progressive commentators in the country. Is Rachel Maddow next? Is this simply a personality conflict within MSNBC, or is one of America's major corporations cracking down on a viewpoint they may not like? Whatever the answer may be, Keith Olbermann should be reinstated immediately and allowed to present his point of view, end quote. You know, when you think of some of the stuff that Olbermann has done, like the health fairs that he helped organize and fund so that people could get medical attention all over the country, when you think about some of the stuff that Olbermann has done, can you imagine someone who likes to have pig intercourse like Sean Hannity doing something like that? Can you imagine a bloated freak religious psychopath like Glenn Beck doing something like that? Joe Scarborough did exactly the same thing. Let's see, where did this come from? I think this is, this was NBC's official comment when Joe Scarborough donated $4,200 to a Republican House candidate in 2006. At the time, Scarborough, I think he had two programs. He had Scarborough Country. And didn't he have Morning Joe at the time? That was 4 years ago. I think it was right after got fired. Anyway, here's the statement from NBC then. Joe Scarborough hosted the Morning Joe talk show and the evening newscast Scarborough Country. Contributed $4,200 in March 2006 to Derek Kitts, Republican candidate for the House from Oregon. A spokesperson for NBC, Jeremy Gaines, replied to questions sent to Scarborough. Quote, yes, he did make a donation to Derek Kitts. Kitts is an old friend of Joe's. Joe hosts an opinion program and is not a news reporter. End quote. So you decide. What do you think? This is from Think Progress. Earlier today, MSNBC declared that it would be suspending progressive host Keith Olbermann because he violated NBC's ethics rules by donating to three Democratic candidates for Congress. As many bloggers have noted, conservative MSNBC host Joe Scarborough has donated to Republican candidates for Congress while promoting the same candidate on air, but has never been disciplined. Moreover, Gawker notes that MSNBC has been exempt from the formal NBC ethics rules for years. It is still a mystery why MSNBC selectively applied NBC's ethic rules to Olbermann. However, it is important to realize that MSNBC has undergone a fundamental change in leadership in the past 2 months. Late last year, Comcast, the nation's largest cable provider and second largest internet service provider, inked a deal taking over NBC Universal, the parent company of MSNBC. Comcast moved swiftly to reshuffle MSNBC's top staff. On September 26, just past, Comcast announced perhaps the most dramatic shift, replacing longtime MSNBC chief Jeff Zucker with Comcast executive Steve Burke. Burke has given generous amounts to both parties, providing cash to outgoing Senator Arlen Specter as well as Representative Eric Cantor and other top Republicans. But, as Public Citizen has noted, Burke has deep ties to the Republican Party. Public Citizen's report reveals that Burke served as a key fundraiser to President George Bush and even served on Bush's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. Quote, Comcast, the country's largest provider of cable TV and broadband internet services, has increased its political giving along with its mergers and acquisitions. CEO Brian Roberts was a co-chairman of the host committee at the 2000 Republican Convention. Comcast cable president Stephen Burke has raised at least $200,000 for the Bush reelection campaign. The company was a platinum sponsor at the 2000 GOP convention. And Roberts was the co-chairman of the host committee at the Philadelphia event. Burke was appointed to Bush's Council of Advisors Science and Technology in 2002, end quote. Why would Comcast be interested in silencing progressive voices? Historically, Comcast has boosted its profits by buying up various telecommunication and media contact companies instead of providing faster internet or better services overall. Many of these mergers, as Public Citizen and Free Press have reported, have been allowed by regulators because of Comcast's considerable political muscle. Comcast's latest regulatory battle has been to oppose net neutrality, a rule allowing a free and open internet, because the company would prefer to have customers pay for preferred online content. Oberman has been a strong voice in favor of a free and open internet. Republicans, on the other hand, have supported the telecommunication industry's push to radically change the internet so corporate content producers have the upper hand over startups like blogs, independent media, small businesses, etc. As Reuters news agency has reported, the incoming Republican Congress has signaled that it will vigorously side with companies like Comcast against an open internet. It is not clear why MSNBC has selectively suspended Oberman indefinitely without pay, but the move showcases the limits of the corporate media. While modern technology has created a seeming multitude of entertainment and television choices, the reality of corporate media consolidation has resulted in fewer investigated news options and less voices in the media with a critical perspective on powerful business interests. Oberman has stood out as a voice for working people in a media universe dominated by so-called reality television and business lobbyists posing as political pundits. It is unfortunate that Comcast and MSNBC have chosen to suspend him. Here's an update from Media Matters' Eric Hananoki. He notes that MSNBC host Joe Scarborough gave a local Alabama Republican candidate $5,000 this past April. CNBC host Larry Kudlow donated $1,000 to Republican Chris Shays in May of 2009. Kudlow also serves as on the leadership council for the Club of Growth, a group that has donated over $2 million to Republican candidates this year. Do NBC ethics rules apply to Scarborough, Pat Buchanan, Kudlow, or other conservatives working for the media company? As Greg Sargent reported, a close reading of the NBC ethics rules suggest that the political donation standards do not even apply to opinionated hosts like Oberman. We'll be right back.
Goodbye is too good a word, baby. So I just say fairly well. And it ain't no use in turning on your light, baby.
Hope between us. That was
Border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Ten before the hour. This might not be the best time to make this announcement, but I want to do it before we get into the next hour. The third hour, by the way, I've decided to strip the bark off the teabagger who won the governor's office in Rick Scott in Florida. So we'll see how that goes coming up. But anyway, it is sheer coincidence, and you got to believe me on this. One of our affiliates is KTLK in Los Angeles. When we have been with KTLK for a long time. They delay us an hour before they start the program, but that is a programming decision that they had to make because of other commitments, which is okay with me. They were carrying all 3 hours. Earlier this week, we were informed that come Monday, KTLK would only be carrying 1 hour of the program. After a few back-and-forth emails, it was decided that they will carry 2 hours of this program starting Monday, the first 2 hours. If you want to hear all 3 hours of the Molloy program and you are in the KTLK listening audience, there's one way you can do it when the first 2 hours are over. Go to the web, and you will find us there. Go to MikeMolloy.com. There's another way, and this way I recommend because it helps keep us on the air, and that would be to subscribe to our podcast. It'll cost you $59.60 for an entire year. And in fact, when is the special coming?
Soon.
We are going to run a winter solstice special, a 2-for-1 on the podcast subscriptions. 2-for-1, not half price, but 2-for-1. If you buy a subscription to the Molloy Program podcast, which costs you $59.60, you get it, and you get to designate someone else that'll be sent to. So you get a 2-for there. So if you are listening on KTLK, I don't even know if they're carrying us tonight because they do carry an awful lot of sports. And when they carry sports, we get preempted. But if you're listening tonight on KTLK, if you're listening Monday night, I should say, and the third hour is not there, it is because KTLK has had to make some programming changes, some adjustments to their broadcast schedule. And you have to do what you have to do, right? So we will be on KTLK continuing from 7 till 9 Pacific time. And then the 9 to 10 hour Pacific time will disappear. Now, again, the fact that this comes on a day when MSNBC decides that Keith Olbermann needs to be suspended indefinitely without pay is pure coincidence. We've been talking with them, last week, Kathy? I think it was last week when we were first notified that this change would occur. All right? So just don't wig out if you're listening on KTLK come Monday. Oh, my God, they got Molloy, too! I've been gotten so many times, nobody can get me. So, anyway. Okay, quick email here from Joe in Temecula, California. To MSNBC or no to MSNBC? That is the question I have now in the wake of Keith Olbermann being suspended indefinitely for making three separate $2,400 campaign contributions to three different Democrats. Never mind the News Corp, parent company of Fox, donated $1 million to the Republican Governors Association. You see, NBC has standards and News Corp does not. I, for one, doubt Olbermann was suspended over these contributions. I think his suspension has been coming for a long time. Only NBC boss Phil Griffin couldn't find an opening. It's likely that Olbermann's commentary on election night was about all Griffin could handle. Chris Matthews, Maddow, and O'Donnell, watch your backs. Olbermann had the top-rated show on MSNBC, which gave him a lot of clout. I also assume that his contract gave him near full editorial control. Olbermann had been loudly proclaiming that the Comcast acquisition of NBC would have no effect on MSNBC's programming. No doubt this stuck in the craw of a right-winger like Comcast CEO Brian Roberts. And how could MSNBC fire Keith? His contract was safe and his ratings were good. Today, NBC found their solution. And while Keith was not technically fired, I doubt very much he will be back. MSNBC is not leaning forward. They are leaning right. I doubt Maddow will survive another year unless she starts just doing straight news and drops the opinion. Matthews will likely survive as he makes a habit out of patronizing Republicans, particularly Sarah Palin. Lawrence O'Donnell? Maybe. Again, he will have to shift more to the center-right. Big Eddie can kiss his crappy little show goodbye. He's already been reprimanded by NBC before. MSNBC is pretty much Fox News light in the morning up until Dylan Radigan, and Dylan is a switch hitter. This morning, when I turned to MSNBC, I had to endure Brian Regan screeching that this election was about a rejection of Obamacare and socialized medicine. The MSNBC anchor just smiled and said nothing. She did not challenge Regan on his claims. She did not make him explain what about the health care reform bill was socialized. Nope. She just let his propaganda float off into the ether. Keith was pretty much the firewall at MSNBC for any sort of left-leaning type news and commentary. He proved against media conventional wisdom that there is a market for left-leaning media programming. No doubt this has been burning up the corporate executives for years. In the wake of this election, where big corporate money can simply purchase government like a commodity, there makes little sense for anyone to run a Democratic-friendly network. The Fox model is just too irresistible to the corporations. Even CNN fell victim to the model. I'm sure Brian Roberts can't wait to compete with Fox on who can produce the most extreme right-wing infotainment and who can hire the most potential Republican presidential candidates. The future cable news choices will be CNN for center-right, Fox News for right-wing, and MSNBC for far right-wing once the Comcast crew takeover is complete. Joe, Temecula, California, will be back after the break.
Think about that.
Seven past the hour. Just a couple of more comments here in the form of emails from people regarding Overman. And then we'll move on because God knows we don't want to talk about the silencing of voices of dissent in this country. I can remember a couple of months ago, Kathy, or several weeks ago, when it became clear that Comcast was going to go through with their purchase of NBC, the controlling interest of NBC, pending approval by the whores in Congress, the number of which has increased dramatically since this last election. And I said at the time, one of the first targets of Comcast is going to be Keith Olbermann. When I heard this today, I just about lost it because there are so few liberal voices left. There are so few voices left to tell the truth. And Olbermann's happened to be one of those voices. Now, yeah, I'm putting things in the past tense. I listened to Rachel during the break making her her statement about what happened today. And I also listened to the person who sat in Olbermann's chair tonight. Oddly, they left up all the graphics that had his picture in the opening shots, and I also listened to Brian Williams on NBC tonight read it as a 10-second news item. So, Olbermann's return to MSNBC is certainly nothing I will ever be privy to before the fact. I'm not on that level. Plus, I don't work it for that company. But I have a gut feeling, and I hope I'm wrong, that his days at MSNBC are over. I also have a gut feeling that if that is the case, then Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow will soon follow. I hope I'm wrong on that, too. A couple of quick emails. We're going to move on. From David in St. Paul, with the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United, MSNBC is a corporation that was granted, quote, individual rights, end quote. They are now able to donate unlimited sums of money into our so-called democratic political process. However, Keith Olbermann is suspended for donating to his choice of political candidates. Corporations now have more rights than individuals who work for them. Yes, David, they do. More political rights, because they've always had more legal rights. From JC, I'm surprised Keith lasted this long. He was sincerely against war and petitioned for peace, a complete contrast to the views of the parent company owner, GE, a major defense contractor, estimated as much as $500 million earned in weapons production just to Iraq every year. Also, a GE chairman was deeply involved in the 2000 Florida vote suppression. Remember the slogan, GE, we bring good things to death. From another David, quote, I just read an article critical of MSNBC on Huffington Post. They said that, I don't know if he means Olbermann, David here, or just MSNBC in general, for being mean and vicious in attacks on Bush and Cheney. Well, mean and vicious are the kind of adjectives for two evil men guilty of torture, mass murder, war crimes, inflicting pain and suffering to thousands of human beings. What is wrong with speaking the truth? Another article criticized MSNBC for pressing Michelle Bachmann to answer questions or explain her comments. The villains who had the nerve to ask Republicans for answers were Chris Matthews and Keith Olbermann. Olbermann was especially mean because he laughed at Bachmann's evasive responses to the questions. Oh, yeah, election night. Remember, that was when Chris Matthews said, are you hypnotized? David, I know you're asking the question rhetorically, what is wrong with speaking the truth? You do not speak the truth, except in rare instances, on any kind of network media in this country. You simply don't do it. Any kind of corporate-owned media, you're allowed a certain amount of truth, but it can't be the wrong kind of truth, which would be political truth. Those days are gone. 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 Last thing about this tonight, go to boldprogressives.org, where the petition is. Again, not that it makes that much difference, because MSNBC doesn't care what its viewers like or don't like. And the reason for that is I can't think of any radio station, radio network, television station, or television network that responds to cries of outrage from their listeners slash viewers, ever. I have seen very popular people on radio stations disappear. That's the way it used to be. You would be flushed down a memory hole. Pooh. One day you're there with a top-rated show. The next day you're gone. Someone's sitting in your chair. Someone's in your time slot. And nobody is allowed to say a word. And then I've had it happen to me. But I've seen it happen to other people. And regardless of the number of names on a petition, like I said, when Air America got rid of me, some little rinky-dink network like Air America that was essentially bankrupt, that's one of the reasons they fired me, is because I demanded to be paid the back wages they owed me. Even with 27,000 names on this petition that went to MSN or to Air America, it might as well have been two names. It doesn't matter. However, I think as a symbolic gesture of protest, it would probably be a good, which is the reason I went to progressives or boldprogressives.org and signed the petition. But as far as signing a petition having an effect, zero, zip, nada. Corporate America, especially where it concerns media, could not care less what you think. They simply do not care. Look what happened to Dan Rather. Look what happened to, who was the guy on MSNBC that had a liberal talk show, was again, married to that girl, Donahue, Phil Donahue. Look what happened to him. Look what happened to Bill Maher on ABC. So this is not new stuff. It's just getting tighter and tighter and tighter. Right-wing demagogues that appear all over media now, radio and television, can do and say anything they want to do and say because they service corporate America. They literally service corporate America, and they're paid a lot of money to do that service, to spread the propaganda, just like in the last 24 hours that Barack Obama's trip to India was going to cost $200 million a day and going to involve half the Navy. I guess you saw that. It was on every single right-wing cable television and radio program in America, and it's all a lie. But that is what they are paid to do, goddammit. That is exactly what they are paid to do. The idea of balanced media, forget it. The idea of a liberal drift or liberal slant or progressive or truth on television or radio with one or two very, very few and far between exceptions, forget it. Forget about it. But I still suggest you sign Keith Olbermann's petition. Bad stuff. All right, we'll be back after this break. And in the bottom of this hour, we are going to play podcast trivia. So stick around. Let's see if you can win one. I'm Mike Malloy.
Called you so many times today, and I guess it's all true what your girlfriend say, that you don't ever want to see me again, and your brother's gonna kill me and he's 6'10". I guess you call it cowardice, but I'm not prepared to go on like this. I can't stand losing. I can't stand losing.
Proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Don't go. 21 past the hour. By the way, this is Guy Fawkes Day. Did you know that? It's November 5th. Gosh, it seems like yesterday, but it was 1605. Guy Fawkes and fellow conspirators attempted to blow up the English Parliament and the King and failed. They were beheaded. this is also the day in 1990. An Egyptian-born gunman assassinated Meir Kahane, the U.S. native who founded the Militant Jewish Defense League, among other things. Also in 1990, George Herbert Walker Bush. In 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court let stand an order requiring the U.S. Army to permit homosexuals to reenlist. Really? In 2004, Saskatchewan became the seventh Canadian province to allow same-sex couples to marry. The seventh, 6 years ago. And it's also the birthday of socialist Eugene Debs. excuse me. Got a couple of his quotes here. He said, "The most heroic word in all languages is revolution." He also said, "When great changes occur in history, when great principles are involved, as a rule, the majority is wrong." You gotta love it. Irish Dave sent it to me. Mike, happy Guy Fawkes Day. Well, here you go. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes, 'twas his intent to blow up the king and parliament. 60 barrels of powder below to prove old England's overthrow. By God's providence, he was catched with a dark lantern and burning match. Hello, boys, let the bells ring. Hello, boys, God save the king. Oh, my. All right. Catherine? All right, we're going to play podcast trivia. Oh, that's right. We're going to play podcast trivia at the end or after this next break. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. You know, George Bush has got a book out. I don't know who wrote it for him, but he says he considered ordering a U.S. military strike against Syria at Israel's request in 2007. Bush denied charges that arose at the time that he had given a green light for Israel to attack the installation. Israel eventually destroyed the facility, which Syria denied was aimed at developing a nuclear weapons capability. In his memoir, Decision Points, to hit bookstores this Tuesday, Bush says shortly after he received an intelligence report about a, quote, suspicious, well-hidden facility in the eastern desert of Syria, end quote, he spoke by phone with then-Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. George, Mr. Olmert told Bush, I'm asking you to bomb that compound. According to the book, a copy of which was obtained by Reuters news agency, Mr. Bush said he discussed options with his national security team. A bombing mission was considered, quote, but bombing a sovereign country with no warning or announced justification would create severe blowback, end quote, he writes. Jesus Christ! A covert raid was discussed, but it was considered too risky to slip a team in and out of Syria undetected. Bush received an intelligence assessment from then-CIA Director Mike Hayden, who reported that analysts had high confidence the plant housed a nuclear reactor, but low confidence of a Syrian nuclear weapons program. Mr. Bush says he told Olmert, I cannot justify an attack on a sovereign nation unless my intelligence agencies stand up and say it's a weapons program. Mr. Bush then ordered the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003 based on intelligence that said Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. Bush has already indicted himself. I long for the day when the guacamoron is traveling someplace overseas and he is nabbed by the authorities of some country and immediately shipped to The Hague. That will happen when China becomes the dominant economic and military force. As it stands right now, they're only number two, but they're closing fast. It'd be interesting to see if Bush is still alive when that day occurs, how quickly it will take a country that has heavy investment from China to nab this war criminal and send him off to trial. We'll be right back.
Maybe you're lost.
it's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program. Oh, my God. Where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads absolutely free. Retail value of, are you ready, $59.60.
Ow!
All you have to do is get the right answer to our trivia question. And we have with us on the air, Sarah from Pittsboro, North Carolina. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Mike.
Are you ready to take a shot at this?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
All right. Well, that's about as ready as anyone can be. I got you. Okay. Now, this is a long one, so you got to pay very close attention. All right?
Okay.
George Raisinbrain Bush's memoirs will be released next week. Complete with crayons. Oh, just kidding. What leaked excerpt from the book might suggest that a foreign nation charge him with war crimes? Would it be...
What excerpt?
What excerpt from the book that's already out there might signal a foreign nation to charge him with war crimes? Is it A, he admitted he ordered Colin Powell to lie to the UN about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? B, Bunny Pants admitted he authorized illegal wiretapping of innocent U.S. citizens? C, the Guacamoron admitted he had authorized the use of white phosphorus weapons to chemically burn the flesh of innocent citizens in Iraq and Afghanistan? D, the chimp in chief knowingly let Osama bin Laden escape Afghanistan right after the 9/11 attacks. And D, Dim Sun admitted he authorized the CIA to waterboard, that means torture, suspected al-Qaeda detainees.
Okay. I'm a little off because I never heard any music.
You don't hear the music?
Oh, no. I guess I don't hear the music.
Okay. What's your answer?
All right. My answer is the one about the wiretapping. I mean, no, the waterboarding.
The waterboarding. E. All right. All right, Sarah.
That was right.
You win.
Hey.
Although all of them are correct, he did all of that, but he didn't admit to any of the other illegal actions in his book the way he admitted to torture. So you do win. Hold on, Sarah. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will get the pertinent information. Congratulations. I've been in Pittsboro, North Carolina. All right. Let's do some phone calls then. John from Oregon. Fairywoodland.com, John. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Not very well.
Yeah, I'm with you there, brother. I'll tell you, what is it you say? Have I told you lately how much I hate these people?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But, you know, the reason I'm calling is that my ire is not just at MSNBC and the people that acquired them. It's the fact that in this last election, there were so many people who were very sort of blasé about whether to vote or not, whether the Democrats had done enough or not, and da-da-da-da-da, all this stuff, and they did something stupid, like either voting for a Republican or not voting at all, not realizing that that may have been the last chance that they had to prevent the sort of thing that happened to Keith Olbermann from happening. I am just so angry at them for that.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but on the other hand, John, I also understand, and I'm sure you do too, that the frustration that people feel, how many times have so many of us trooped to the polls to vote for a Democrat only to find out that we're voting on electronic voting machines? I don't know if you all have them in Oregon, but we have them here. And like I said on the air the other night, when Kathy and I walked into our precinct, and notice that we were going to be in a church, and notice that we were going to be voting on Diebold. In a church, To me, there's something weird about that. I'm not a believer, but the fact that a church would give over its gymnasium to people whose sole purpose is to steal elections, to make people think they're voting. Given all that, I can understand how people have gotten to the point where they say, look, the game is too rigged. What, you know, why should I fool myself into believing I'm really voting for the person I consider to be the best candidate? So I get your point, but I also get the point of people who've had it. So,
well, here in Oregon, we vote by mail, but our ballots are counted by an electronic device. And who knows how that is monitored?
Well, the fact that you vote by mail, I mean, anyone who wants to can take, after they fill in their ballot, can take it, you know, take it to the basement or to the nearest Kinko's and photocopy it, and you've got a record. We don't have any of that here. We don't even get a receipt, nothing. They hand us a little yellow credit card. It looks like a credit card. It's just like buying something. You know what I'm saying? You push your credit card in, your little yellow voter card, and bingo, up on the screen pops the ballot. And then you push, and it goes bingo, bingo, bingo. And then when you're all done, it shows you the complete a record of what you voted for and said, is this how you want to vote? And then you click yes, and it's gone.
You'll never see it again.
No, you never see it again. You don't know. And then that evening, you hear the vote totals from the Department of Elections here in Georgia, and you find out that Republicans won every single race except one. Down around Albany, Georgia, representative who's represented that area for, I think, 10 terms, a guy named Sanford Bishop, a black man, which is very unusual because it's South Georgia. And here's this guy who is a African-American who got reelected again, slim margin, but he still got reelected. So it makes you think that whoever runs the Diebold machines and reprograms them must have missed the ones from Albany or let him win, so it looked like it wasn't a complete sweep. But I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying about the voting, but I also understand the frustration because I feel it.
Yeah, and we're really going to need to watch out for control over the internet and any control over public access to the internet, because that's the next thing.
Something
that's harder to acquire by a corporation, and I fear that our last great source of information is going to be taken away from us. This is enough of a blow.
Well, that's one of the objectives of this new Congress coming in, all these Republicans, corporations who use the Internet. Have been so pissed off. I mean, there are a lot of sites where you have to subscribe. Washington Post is one. New York Times is one. Of course, if you have a subscription to the New York Times newspaper, then you get a free online subscription. But Wall Street Journal, there are a lot of places where you have to subscribe in order to enter their site. But the idea that entire blocks of the Internet are off limits unless you pay money. Yeah, net neutrality has been the amazing thing about this tool for organizing and communication, and that's why the right wing has to shut it down.
Yep.
The potential for organizing, the potential for sharing information, for getting the truth out. I've gotten emails, John, over the past 3 or 4 months from 7 or 8. Liberal sites, Consortium News, Truth Out, Crooks and Liars, Media Matters. I can just go right down the list that all depend on two things, net neutrality, A, but B, or this is that was B, A is donations. And every one of them is just struggling. And for somebody who is working class like I am, or somebody who's unemployed or whatever, how in the hell? I used to contribute on a regular basis $100 every time I got asked by Truthout. But this is back in the day when I was working for Air America and I could afford to do that. It's just astonishing how voices of dissent are being squeezed out of existence until it's going to be all right wing all the time. And I don't know how. I don't know how to stop it anymore. I really don't.
Either. And, you know, years ago, I worked for UCLA as an auditorium manager, and I was privy to certain conversations on the part of the administration talking about what to do about the kids that were demonstrating against the war in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And the attitude of the administration came around to, well, these kids are a bunch of ingrates. They don't understand the realities of the world or something to that extent. And it gradually went to the fact that we need to make them appreciate their education more, well, forgetting the fact that the reason they're protesting is because they had gotten an education.
Right.
And gradually UCLA went from being a bastion of research and scholarship to one in which everything had to be a profit center.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to do research, it had to lead to a product that could be sold instead of just simple curiosity.
Right.
And people forgot the fact that the reason we had a Silicon Valley is because first we had a Stanford.
Yeah.
The curious people that tinkered this thing.
Yeah. Well, John, there's some music. We got to take a break here. Reagan was part of the reason that decline occurred, for sure. John, thanks for checking in. Okay, have a good weekend, you and Bridget.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Mike.
All right.
Hang in there, buddy.
Take care. We'll be right back. What was that? 10 before the hour. And just remember, at the Rally for Sanity in the park, was it last weekend? The weekend before? I don't know. When Jon Stewart had the balls to suggest that there was equivalency between Fox and MSNBC, and specifically used the Oberman program as proof. Mr. Stewart, you've lost a viewer, I swear to God. And that's a shame, because a lot of the stuff The Daily Show did was pretty cool. But Jon Stewart is not a stupid man, and to make that kind of pitch in front of 200,000 relatively young people who were either there to be entertained or maybe to get a little bit of truth, and Stewart does that. Well, good for you, buddy. You got yours, right? I know. Donald is in Shelbyville, Indiana. Hello, Donald.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Michelle Bachmann, she is in a trance because she cannot believe how stupid America is when Fox News told her, just get up there and say, you know, we're going to do what? We're going to cut the budget, we're going to cut the spending, and we're going to take your Medicare. And, you know, Fox News and all big corporations told her, all you got to do is just stand there, and you're going to become a senator. She was dumbfounded. She was in a trance. She could not believe that America has gotten that stupid. The entire campaign. Nobody in America on the right has said how they're going to cut. You know,
sure.
I've seen all these advertisements on death panels, on how they're going to tax you to death on the insurance. You know, does anybody remember the 90s when trauma centers were shutting down all across America?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does anybody remember that?
Oh, you know, yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
I mean, something is wrong. I mean, you know, I'm a Christian. I know you're not a Christian, but you know what? You got to look at this. Read the first part of Revelation where it says that God has something against the church. Let me tell you something. The churches are fake, because let me tell you something. I am a Christian. I love God, but I hate the churches. when they say that the homosexuals should die, for one, they're no better than the guy down there in Florida, the stupid idiot, that wants to burn the Koran and say that's not what God wants. God is about free choice. If you want to be a homosexual, that is your business. And God says that we're to love you. God died for everybody.
Well, that's right, Donald. Oh, oops. Oh, no. Donald, I just lost you. Oh, well, I'm just getting good. I wonder if God has something to do with that. Rand Paul. Following his big win, this is at Raw Story, in Tuesday's midterm election, Senator-elect Rand Paul explained his economic philosophy in about 30 seconds during a CNN interview, claiming he wants to shield the wealthiest Americans from paying higher taxes in the name of protecting the working class. This is what he said. This is what he told Wolf Blitzer. I would say the Democrats must be in favor of a second American depression, because if you raise taxes to that consequence, that's what will happen in this country. What if they just raise taxes on the richest, those making more than $250,000 a year, Blitzer asked. Paul answered, well, the thing is, we're all interconnected. There are no rich, there are no middle class, there are no poor. You remember a few years ago when they tried to tax the yachts? That didn't work. You know who lost their jobs? People making the boats. The guys making $50,000 or $60,000 a year lost their jobs. We all either work for rich people or we sell stuff to rich people. So just punishing rich people is as bad for the economy as punishing anyone. Let's not punish you. Let's keep taxes low and let's cut spending. Rand Paul lives in a place like Kentucky, and he doesn't see the poverty. As Michael in Roswell says, those must be some powerfully large blinders he's wearing. Well, there you have it, truth seekers. There are no poor people. That's an illusion. There are no rich people, except the ones that desperately need our help. We've got to help the rich people, because goddamn it, when they go to buy their yachts, if they can't buy their yachts, think of the tens and tens of people thrown out of business because the rich can't buy their yachts. This is insane. I mean, this is insane. I ought to spend the next hour stripping the flesh off of Rand Paul, but I've already got somebody in mind. The new governor of the great state of Florida. The one whose company. What was it? HCA. His name's Rick Scott. Columbia HCA. At one time, the biggest hospital chain in the country. And they stole so much money from Medicare that they were fined. The company was fined. The company was fined $1.7 billion. And Rick Scott had to resign as CEO. And now this filthy dog is the governor-elect of Florida. Well, stick around, because I'm not going to spare this guy anything. Screw this, especially on a night when Keith Olbermann gets suspended indefinitely without pay for making a political contribution. Son of a bitch. All right, I'll be right back. Stay with me, if you dare. I'm Mike Malloy. Stop the music. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. You know, a lot of talk about all the new Republican governors as a result of Tuesday's election. Florida is a good example. Florida has a thief, a liar, a con artist, and someone who likes to defraud the federal government as its new CEO. The guy's name is Rick Scott. Rick Scott, like a lot of these newly elected Republican governors, says he wants to run Florida like a business. I wonder if he wants to run it the way he ran Columbia HCA, Hospital Corporation of America is what HCA stands for. Young Mr. Scott spent a decade buying up hospitals to create the country's largest healthcare chain, Columbia HCA. According to New York Times, former colleagues described Mr. Scott as a no-nonsense leader, fixated on costs, willing to cut programs, fire employees, strip it down to its bare bones. He presents himself, Rick Scott does, as a turnaround expert. You know, he goes into something that's failing and makes it a big success. He told supporters the other night in his victory speech, quote, "I won't rest until we make Florida a model for the country in job creation and education," end quote. Well, he wants to destroy public education, and the way he's going to create jobs is by firing thousands upon thousands of state workers. Plus, behind, he had a campaign slogan, "Let's get to work." That was his campaign slogan. Let's get to work. He said that he had a plan of 7 steps to create 700,000 jobs in 7 years. Ooh, all the 7s. My head is spinning. Oh, my goodness. Among his proposals are plans to privatize more prisons. Oh, yes. That's a big business in Florida. Give vouchers to parents for schools. Vouchers to parents for schools, which means to gut and destroy public education. And give vouchers to Medicaid recipients for health insurance. Medicaid recipients. Those are poor people who cannot afford. So he's going to give them vouchers and get them off of Medicaid. And what are they going to do with their vouchers? Here's a voucher for $100. Now go get yourself some insurance. But I can't. Oh, well, too bad. You can keep the voucher. And he also wants to reduce what businesses have to pay for the workers who are injured or killed on their job sites. This is the way this rancid, bald-headed son of a bitch is going to revitalize Florida. Mm-hmm. He said yesterday or Wednesday that to light the burden of government on every Florida family, there's a burden of government on every Florida family. There is indeed. Every Florida family can feel the weight of the burden of government. Oh, yes. Stop a Florida family and ask them if they feel the burden of government. But in order to lighten the burden of government, Mr. Scott pledged to shrink the state payroll by thousands of jobs and to bring tax cuts, hefty tax cuts, for the wealthy. Here we go again. You see, just go for it, Rick. Destroy the Sunshine State. Just beat it into dust, like the rest of these governors are going to do. Bum, 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 bum. Democrats are predicting a return to the dark ages in Florida. Republicans are thrilled. The state Senate President Mike Haridopoulos said, "It's a real opportunity for us. Not since the 1860s, Haridopoulos said, has the state had such a conservative concentration of power. And as a result, a lot of legislation is going to pass. Specifically, he said the state would probably revisit a Senate bill vetoed by Governor Charlie Crist that would have established merit-based pay for teachers. Well, that's great. You know, this merit-based pay for teachers thing is one of the biggest scams in the country. Do you all understand that? The idea being that because so many kids are failing in school, it must be the teachers. So let's have merit-based pay. And how are we going to decide if the kids are succeeding? Oh, well, we'll give them tests. But what about the big cheating scandals that usually result from these horrific, hideous tests, like in the state of Georgia right now? Oh, well, that's just because we got some rotten apples. No, it's not. No, it's not. Merit-based pay for teachers means that the teachers are then responsible for the dysfunctional children that come into their classrooms, children that have no breakfast because the family has been unemployed for 2 years. They have not had proper nutrition at all. Maybe they haven't been to a dentist for a while, have a toothache. Maybe the parents are divorced. Usually they are. The parents are divorced. The kids are living in a trailer or a furnished apartment with roaches running around. When they watch television, they see this consumer-driven society, this product-oriented society, all the stuff that these kids will never have. It further depresses them because, after all, they're little kids in America, and that means you got to have stuff. They have no health care. Their parent or parents probably beat them out of the frustration that the parents are going through. They may have some learning disabilities, ADD or what's the other one, Kathy? Attention deficit disorder. What's the other one? Hyperactivity disorder. They have no money when they come to class for the school lunch, and they certainly don't bring a lunch. They may not get any supper when they get home. There's no little after-school things going on in their lives. They don't go to ballet classes. They don't take piano lessons. They're not in Cub Scouts. Why? Because there's no money for this stuff. So dump it all on the teacher. The kid comes to class. He or she can no more learn than he or she can fly. But let's blame the teacher for that. Because a teacher, you see, in a public school carefully selects the pupils he or she wants to teach and makes sure that he or she will only be teaching kids who are open to learning, right? Isn't that the way it goes? No, it's not. But old Rick Scott, boy, he's got a plan. Yeah, give vouchers to parents for schools and get rid of that, or reinstate that merit pay thing. Let's do all kinds of stuff. We're going to turn Florida around. Well, there's one thing about Rick Scott. He's a thief, a crook, a liar, and he commits fraud. In 1987, he helped found the Columbia Hospital Corporation with two business partners. This merged with Hospital Corporation of America in 1989 to form Columbia HCA. It eventually became the largest private for-profit healthcare company in the U.S. He was forced to resign as the chief executive of Columbia HCA in 1997 amid a scandal over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. The company ultimately admitted to 14 felonies and agreed to pay the federal government $1.7 billion in fines. And Mr. Scott later became a venture capitalist and entered politics this year when he announced his intention to run for governor of Florida. $1.7 billion in fines for fraud. Fraud. Ripping off the government. Ripping off Medicare. Stealing. Sticking his bony-ass hands in other people's pockets and taking it. It's mine! And now, he's going to run Florida like a business.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by.
one they picked.
Afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, reading this stroke piece, the New York Times, written by Damian Cabe about Rick Scott, Florida's new chief executive. I'm reading the article earlier today, and it's about 500, 600 word article. And this guy, Damian Cabe at the New York Times, is doing for Rick Scott what Monica Lewinsky did for Bill Clinton. And it's rather embarrassing to watch. In a 500-word piece on Rick Scott, there is one sentence about the $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HCA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs. One sentence. And the way Damian Cabe writes it is like this. He may have been famous outside his country for $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HCA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs. There it is. That's it. Next sentence. But inside his company, he was known for setting up a report card system for individual hospitals and their administrators, tracking everything from patient outcomes to revenue and growth in admissions. And the sentence right before the brief mention of $1.7 billion in fines, the sentence right before it. His former colleagues say he was particularly successful in two areas, negotiating deals and imposing more financial discipline into the healthcare system. Financial discipline? Is that what theft and fraud is called now? It's called financial discipline? Aha, well... Jesus, God, I'm going to take my rifle, walk into the nearest bank, hold it up, walk out with 80 grand and say, hey, no, don't arrest me. That's financial discipline. I'm just trying to make you bank employees work better. Some freak named Nemes or something, who sold Columbia HCA a series of hospitals during Mr. Scott's thieving tenure there, said, quote, it was the classic management case. He gave them responsibilities. He gave them authority. And if they didn't perform, he got rid of them. It's sort of the direct opposite of government. That's what Mr. Nemzoff, give me another hospital. Sure, Rick Scott, you need to defraud the federal government of even more money. Okay, here. And then this Damian Cabe, writing for the New York Times, says, and that may be Mr. Scott's biggest challenge. He is a proud outsider who has never served an elected or appointed office. He's also never served in prison. And you got to wonder why, right? Well, the corporation committed the crime, not Mr. Scott. No, it's never the CEO. Of course, he had to resign. After making hundreds of millions of dollars. You know how much he spent on the race? What did he spend on? He spent $73 million of his own money to become governor of Florida. $73 million. You got to wonder. No. Let me change the pronoun. I have to wonder how much of that money came from people he screwed over. How much of that came from Medicare fraudulent billing? How much of that came from Rick Scott stealing anything he felt like stealing? Here, let me take this. And all right, now you guys over to that hospital, I want some results here. You people only managed to defraud the Medicare of $2 million last year. I want that up to $5 million. Do you hear? Yes, sir. We're trying to run efficient hospital. Then, by God, do it. That's efficiency to Mr. Rick Scott. Huh? Despite his having, this is a Damien Cave again writing at the Times, despite his having named a transition team of conservative state lawmakers, a lot of people, critics and some supporters, ask whether he can be trusted to make cuts without dire consequences. For instance, his seven-step plan calls for laying off 5% of the state workforce, rolling back state and local spending to 2004 levels, and, here's a good one, adding drug screening as a requirement for welfare recipients. Yes, goddammit! Do that! Drug screening! How about criminal screening for people who want to run for governor of Florida? Now wait a minute. Wait a minute, Mike Malloy. What are you talking about? We can't have welfare recipients smoking weed? Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? Drug screening as a requirement for welfare recipients. Oh, he defeated Alex Sink, a Democrat, by only a single percentage point after spending his $73 million that he obviously stole from any place he could get his filthy hands on it. And 62% of voters said they still had reservations about him, according to exit polls. Really? Well, I'll tell you what, you can take your reservations and use them to make dinner, because Rick Scott, he is going to stick it into the state of Florida and break it off at the hilt. And as far as children, people who go to school, young people, the elderly, get ready. Rick Scott is about to do you the way he did the federal government. Don't you love these Republicans? Won't you come to Miller Park? Before the hour. So Florida CEO Rick Scott is somebody who should be serving a huge amount of time in a federal penitentiary someplace, along with other people who have defrauded the federal government. And again, who was it mentioned the other day? If Rick Scott would have done this in China, the Chinese premier would have sent somebody over, three or four people, who would have taken him out behind the nearest hospital that Rick Scott ran and put a bullet in the back of his head and then sold his organs. But in this country, after you are fined $1.7 billion, your company is anyway, after you've been forced to resign, after all of that, then you take the money you stole, spend tens of millions of it, $73 million, to become the CEO of a poor, sad state like Florida. Poor, sad state? Yeah, that's right. If you don't know why I call it a poor, sad state, read any of Carl Hyacin's books, and you'll know. So there he is. Now, Jeb Bush, former Governor Jeb Bush, had to weigh in on this thief. Because Jeb Bush is a thief, a con artist, and a liar, too. Former Governor Jeb Bush said that Rick Scott, quote, will have willing partners in the legislature to do bigger things, end quote. Oh, my goodness. Mr. Bush said that Mr. Scott's business expertise, his business expertise, would be particularly useful. Jeb Bush said, quote, Medicaid reform, continued education reform, and business climate improvements are all places where I expect our new governor's experience will be helpful, end quote. Jeb Bush, I'll be a son of a bitch. Medicaid reform. Really? How about this, Jeb? Just let Rick Scott steal all the money. That'll reform it, right? That'll get those poor, drug-tested welfare recipients off Medicaid. Let Rick Scott steal it. He seems to be very good at that. Stealing other people's money. People who come into his filthy chain of hospitals sick, distraught, freaked out, fighting insurance companies. And there's Rick Scott right there, ready to relieve them of their wallet. My God. But old Rick Scott, oh, he gonna be a good governor. Yes, he is. He's gonna be a good Republican governor. He's gonna take care of things. He was forced to resign as CEO of Columbia HCA in 1997 amid a scandal. Scandal? Over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. Billing practices? I have a problem with my practice where it concerns making sure my 30 caliber rifle is sighted incorrectly. Usually what I will do is go to a range, and I will have the instructor there to help me make sure that my scope and everything is sighted incorrectly. So when I go to shoot a deer, I'll be able to shoot him where I want to. Well, I decided to change. Instead of going into the shooting range, I now go into the bank for my target practice. And you know what? I've never been able to get a single shot off, because every time I walk in, everybody just starts handing me money. He was forced to resign as CEO of Columbia HCA in 1997 due to a scandal over the company's business and Medicare billing practices. But Rick didn't do anything wrong. Nah. He was forced to resign by an impetuous board that said, "All right, Rick, you've stolen enough. Bye." The company ultimately admitted to 14 felonies. A company. How does a company talk? See, a company is usually a filing in some lawyer's office. So you pull open the filing cabinet. Oh, yeah, stuff is still filing papers. And the papers leap out of the file and say, and then the attorney sits there and says, "My client, the sheath of papers that represents Columbia HCA, just pled guilty to 14 felonies, and we agree to pay the federal government $1.7 billion. And then if you're an enterprising investigative reporter like this dork that works at New York Times, Damian Cave, you turn to the sheath of papers and you say, "Are you really pleading guilty?" And the sheath of papers, which is the company, will say, "Oh, okay." And the attorney will say, "What that means is, well, he's pleading guilty, but only as a way of ending," which has been a very trying time for Columbia HCA. "We want to get on with the business of of helping people get well again. You know, we forced our CEO, Rick Scott, to resign." Why doesn't the enterprising reporter ask Rick Scott about that? "Hey, Rick, how much did you stick in your own pocket?" You know what kind of answer you get? Oh. Okay. Republicans. Now, you think Rick Scott's attitudes toward public money. Isn't that funny? He runs a company that steals as much as they can steal of public money, tax money, Medicare money. Where do you think Medicare money comes from? Huh? Where do you think it comes? Certainly not from Rick Scott. But he and his company relieve millions and millions of dollars. And then he gets elected governor of Florida. Pretty good gig, huh? What do you suppose he's going to do as governor of Florida? Somebody better lock up the state treasury. They better keep that away from old Rick. Watch out now.
But make sure, Rick, you get those welfare recipients drug tested, right? Huh? How about drug testing former CEOs who take over state legislatures? How about that? Ah, you wanna do that one? No? Why not? Oh, it's beneath you. Well, of course it's beneath you. Would you submit, Rick Scott? I mean, you're a former CEO. You're a big guy, right? You're now the governor of Florida. Why should you submit to a drug test? Jesus Christ, what are you suggesting, Mike Malloy? That I do drugs?
But let's get the welfare recipients. Everybody likes to kick their asses, right, Rick? Everybody likes to stomp on them, right, Rick? How many of those people did you screw over when they were Medicaid recipients, huh?
Jesus, Rick, you're just one hell of a man. You and Carly Fiorina and Meg Whitman, boy, you guys really prove. Do good in business, and then you can become governor. Well, some of you. You go, Rick.
Only in America, only we could produce these kind of swine, this kind of scum, this kind of rapacious capitalist pig,
who cheats and lies and steals and then gets his ass elected governor. How?
By spending $73 million. Where'd you get the money, Rick?
Come on, Rick, where'd you get the money? By pulling up your bootstraps, right?
God have mercy. Well, I'll tell you, if you combined the kind of Republican entrepreneurship
that Rick Scott so obviously represents with the willingness and ability to commit massive fraud, theft, lies, cheating, deceit,
why, my goodness, even you can become... Oh, you also have to have a huge amount of money in reserve that you can spend to buy the governor. $73 million to become governor. It's not about the money, right, Rick? I mean, what's the governorship pay in Florida? A couple hundred grand? Lunch money, right? Lunch money! You probably gouge that much out of one or two patients over the years, right, Rick? Typical Republican. Typical American capitalist. Buy up all kinds of hospitals, consolidate everything, fire people. And then steal every goddamn thing you can get your hands on. Who's going to stop you, right?
Making plans to meet him somewhere along. But love is no longer there. The woman of his heart no longer cares. It's best to call it quits and go your separate way. Playing that cheating game only leads to hurt and pain. And cause each other unhappy days. Cheating in the next room. Making plans to be with them soon. Talking softly on the telephone.
I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away.
Ten before the hour. You know, I've got some real problems with the sacrosanct press in this country because they simply don't do their jobs, and it's the only enterprise, the only profession given constitutional protection from the very beginning. The framers knew that as long as this little nascent democracy that they started all those years ago, this little Democratic Republic that they started all those years ago. I think they understood, even though all of them were fairly young, with the exception of Franklin, but they understood the base nature of human beings that buried beneath the veneer of civilization for most of us is this rapacious, thieving, lying, sneaking, stealing, reptilian rat bastard, and those are just the Republicans, who, given a chance, will steal their own mother's false teeth if they know they can cash it in and buy a gram of crack. Well, Rick Scott fits that mold perfectly, the new Florida governor. And the press has an obligation to expose this guy. But what we have instead in the New York Times by Damian Cave is a puff piece, a stroke job, a kiss right on Rick Scott's shiny pate by the writer, Damian Cave. The opening sentence in the Times.
Many of the newly elected Republican governors have said they want to run their state like a business, but few have been as brash and bold in corporate life or with their economic campaign proposals as Rick Scott, Florida's new chief executive.
It isn't until you get to about the 30th paragraph that you read,
he may have been famous outside his company for $1.7 billion in fines that Columbia HSA paid for defrauding Medicare and other federal programs.
It doesn't even say in the article that Rick Scott was forced to resign as CEO. Doesn't even say it. So the complicity among and between so-called journalists like Damian Cave and an absolute corporate thug, a plunderer, somebody who sees capitalism, it really is what it is, a way to steal, gouge, lie, cheat, take advantage of, fire, remove people from their livelihoods, do everything you possibly can to stuff your own pockets with as much cash as you can. Rick Scott personifies that attitude. So the people of Florida, apparently not being a very bright group at all, they also elected Mario Rubio. Rubio? Oh, my God. Well, if you've ever spent any time in Florida, as I have, you know that it's populated by a bunch of folks who just recently learned to walk upright. It's really, really sad. There are dumbass states in this union, but 90% of Florida is comprised of real trolls. They haven't a clue. A 10-foot tidal wave sweeping across the state would probably be a good start to get things, you know, cleaned out a little bit. It's a real cesspool of graft, fraud, crime, lie, and most of our crimes are financial crimes. Stealing, thieving, lying. I think everybody who, you know, Florida's where you go when there's no place left to go. A lot of people go there to wait to die, but a lot of people go down there to feed on the poor slobs who come from other parts of the country and just can't make it anymore.
Oh, let's go to Florida, Harriet.
Why, dear?
Well, there's no heating bills.
So there they all sit, clustered together, waiting for a predator, a vulture like Rick Scott, to come along and spend $73 million in his campaign to be governor. With the help of a press corps, all the way up to the New York Times with some crack journalist like Damian Cave, who waits 30 paragraphs to inform his readers that Rick Scott had to, Rick Scott's company, his company, the papers filed in the lawyer's office. That Rick Scott's company was fined $1.7 billion for Medicare fraud. Medicare fraud. I wonder how many old bastards down in Florida voted for this guy. I wonder how many of those old bastards that voted for this guy had their health costs padded by this freak over the years, by this freak's company or him, over the years,
and don't even realize it. But the company was fined. Let's put the company in jail. Where's that sheaf of papers? Mr. Lawyer, give us that company. Okay, just a second here. Put handcuffs on that sheaf of paper. We can't. There's no arms or hands or anything. Well, calm it down. Stick it here. Put it in this file folder. That'll do it. That'll take care of Columbia HCA. Oh, by the way, anybody around here seen the CEO? Well, he resigned, and we understand he's going to run for governor of Florida. Run for governor of Florida? A lying, cheating, sneaking crook like him? Oh, well, he has an ice cube's chance in hell, or Florida. Yeah, he'll never make it. Rick Scott is just one example. We could sit here for the next 17 years and do a new example every single night of these lying, stinking Republicans. But there will be ample opportunity coming, trust me, because the Republicans were handed a mandate. America has decided they love Rick Scott and the Republicans. Amen and amen. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, Truth Seekers. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.